Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer of this program, and I'll be your host. Earlier this month, The Trapdoor hosted a storytelling showcase at Welch's Ale House, and we are about to hear from the first of the storytellers from that night. Before we begin, special thanks to Ben Larson, Courtney Heiser, John Cheesebrew, and Becca Bell from The Trapdoor for hosting this event and helping to facilitate our broadcasting of the stories now. The first storyteller was Christy Bowen, and we'll pick up with her story after she was introduced by her good friend and Trapdoor organizer, Courtney Heiser. Please, enjoy the show.
I am so honored to introduce my friend Christy Bowen tonight. Christy has been on our stage a couple times before, and I've known Christy for a couple of years. We kind of knew each other through social media a little bit, and I think liked what we knew of each other in that realm. So we said, let's get together and have a casual lunch sometime, like in the middle of the week. And in that casual lunch, I think we talked about divorce, death, infidelity. On our second meeting, which was drinks in this establishment, I had just come off the heels of a really, really bad first date, and last date, by the way, with somebody, and I was so excited to share this story with Christy. I was like, this is outlandish, you're gonna love it, blah, blah, blah. And she followed up with a story that knocked me off my feet. And so she is going to tell you that story tonight. In addition to being a hilarious storyteller, Christy is a mother to sweet June. She is getting married in October. She is a career woman, and she is probably like the kindest, most gracious person I know, which is why this story could only happen to someone like Christy. So please welcome Christy Bowen to the stage.
A year and a half ago, Courtney and I had drinks here at Welch's, which of course used to be CS3. And so when Courtney reached out to me to ask if I would share this story, my initial reaction was, I don't know if this story is really worthy of the Trapdoor stage. And then I wrote it all down and reworked it, and I was like, this happened to me. Maybe I should tell people this. So one, it doesn't happen to them. And two, because it does actually make for kind of an incredible story. And I'll let you kind of define incredible for yourselves after you hear it. So I have to take us back a few years to set the stage for this story. So it's 2010, and I actually live in Detroit at the time. I was doing a teaching program there and coming down to Fort Wayne on the weekends to hang out with some friends that I had made here. I met a guy through a mutual friend at a game night, and he was charming and charismatic, and he had a great personality. And I thought, you know, I haven't dated for a while. I should really just get myself back out there. So the story begins in a kind of boring way, and where it ends up is pretty incredible. So this guy asks me out, and I say yes for the reasons I just mentioned. I really should be dating. It's been a few years. I'll just go to dinner with him. He seems nice. So I meet him at his house, and we walk over to Bourbon Street Hideaway under C Street. And along the walk, he takes me by the fort, and he shares a little bit about the history of Fort Wayne. And it's beautiful outside, and I'm thinking, this is going pretty well. I'm actually kind of excited for this dinner. Seems like it's going to be okay. So we go down to Bourbon Street Hideaway, and I don't know if you've been there before, but it's nicely lit, just dim enough. We get the menu, and it seems like everything looks delicious and is fairly reasonably priced, and I think this is really going to be great. We engage in some nice conversation, and I recall from all my first dating etiquette that I should probably assume that he's maybe going to pay, because that's what happens when someone asks someone else out on a date, usually, sometimes, maybe. So I do what any respectful date would do, and I match and mirror his behavior. So he orders an appetizer, and I say, that sounds great, I'll split it with you. He doesn't order a drink, so I don't order a drink either. I don't order the most expensive thing on the menu, and when they ask if we want dessert, I take his lead, and we decide to split something. So over the course of this food, we have a great conversation, like I said, and everything seems to be going pretty well. Then the bill comes. I do what, again, any good date would do, and I reach for my purse because I have no problem paying for myself. During the course of reaching for my purse, I realized that I had done what women at some point in their lives have all done, and that's switch bags before I picked my outfit for the date. So I'm rummaging through my purse and realizing that when I switched bags, I didn't put my wallet in my purse, so I don't have any money. So thinking that he's probably going to, in the next few seconds, grab the bill and say, "Don't worry, I got it," I kind of waited out. That's not what happened. What actually happened is he grabbed the bill, opened it up, and said, "Wow." And I thought, "Oh, here we go." He said, "Your half is $26. And I'm not great at math, but I quickly times that by two and realize that dinner was actually a pretty reasonable $52, and I wasn't worth 26 of it. So I told him, "I forgot my wallet and I'm so embarrassed. I'm really sorry," assuming that what he would probably say was, "Oh my gosh, don't worry about it, I got it." Again, that's not what happened. He looked at me like this. And I said, "Well, I suppose I could pay you back." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Okay." So he paid the bill, and now it was a little bit awkward. And I said, "Are you wanting me to pay you back soon?" Because the conversation had kind of come to a lull. And he said, "Sure." So I said, "I guess we could walk to the ATM on our way back." Now, some of you are putting together at this moment in your heads what I didn't put together at that moment in time, and that's that I had forgotten my wallet and my purse. So if I couldn't pay for my dinner in that moment, I probably didn't have my ATM card to pull out cash. But being so baffled by the fact that this was the conversation that was happening between us, I had forgotten that in the moment. So we walked to the ATM. Pretty much in silence, but nevertheless, we walked to the ATM. When we got there, I realized what you've already put together and what I just shared with you, which is that I didn't have my wallet, which included my ATM card, and couldn't pull out any money. So at this point, I thought, any reasonable human being is surely going to at very least feel sorry for me, even if they don't think I'm worth the $26 that he paid for dinner, and just kind of let this go or we'll figure it out later. But that's not what happened. I might say that a few more times during the story, so bear with me. So I said, "I don't have my ATM card. I'm really sorry. I'm not sure what's happened to my brain." And he said, and I said, "Well, I guess we could walk back and I could mail you a check." And he said, "Okay." So at this point, I'm thinking the date is beyond over. There's clearly something wrong with me, my conversational skills, my etiquette. I haven't dated in so long that the entire game has changed somehow. So we walk back to his house. We're walking along Spy Run, for those of you who are local. And he reaches for my hand and tries to hold it. And I'm thinking, I am so confused. You think this is going well enough to reach for my hand, but I've tried twice to pay you back for my dinner. So I don't take his hand, and I literally stopped walking for a second. And then we continued on, and he said, "Well, would you like to come in?" And I thought, I get it. That's where the camera crew is, because I'm being punked. So I went in. And he says, "You have to see my bathroom. It's as small as a closet. It's crazy." The people who know me are laughing really loud, because they're like, only Christy would do this. So I did. I walked into the bathroom and I said, "Wow, it is really small, like a closet." And I turned around and he was right here and tried to kiss me. And I thought, this can't be a $26 kiss. Is this how you want me to pay you back? So I dodged it and said, "Excuse me." We exchanged a few pleasantries and I went outside. And I said, "Well, thanks for dinner." Albeit that was a confusing remark given that I was about to pay myself. And he said, "When do you think I'll see you again?" And I thought, oh, of course, for the check that you're expecting from me. We can make those arrangements. And I said, well, this weekend I'm actually going camping with the mutual friends that we had that introduced us. And he said, oh, cool, I'll come along. I thought, great. How much is it going to cost me to have you there? So we went to Mongo, and those of you who have been to Mongo know that you can rent canoes. And I had grabbed $40 cash out of the ATM with my ATM card, which I brought with me to go camping because I got my brain back somewhere along the course of that action and realized I need to pull out two 20s to pay him back $26. When we got there, canoes were cash only. It was raining, and none of my friends had any money in terms of cash. And I said, no, you don't understand. I have to keep these two 20s. I can't tell you the whole story right now, but if I don't have this cash, really bad things are going to happen and continue to happen. And my friends were like, Christy, the whole group is coming, and if we don't rent the canoes now, we're not going to have them. So I paid for the canoes, which were $25, and left me with 15, which is not 26. So we go canoeing. He arrives later that night. I realize I only have $15, and I zip myself up in my tent. I hear him ask around, is Christy here? Where's Christy? And I think, please God, if these people are really my friends, they won't say. I feel a little knock on my tent, and I unzip it just enough to see him leaning in, and I say, you want your money, don't you? I only have $15. I'll figure out how to get you the rest. And I stuck it through the zipper and zipped it up. And I could see a look of confusion on his face, like maybe he wanted to continue the conversation, maybe even go out again. At this point, I just don't know. And I stay in my tent the rest of the night. Now, mind you, it wasn't dark. We spent the entire night at the campsite. He was there, so I was in my tent for probably 13 hours by myself. In the morning, I waited until he left. I got out, chastised my friends for telling him where I was and making me pay for the canoes because now I was going to have to figure out how to get him the additional 11. I avoided him for a little while, but I knew it would come back to get me just based on the way it had gone thus far. So 2 months later, the friends that I met him through got married. And guess who I saw at the wedding? I was sitting by myself at a table because I was with the same friends who abandoned me in my tent when I was camping, and apparently they think it's funny to let me face them alone. He came over, sat down at the table, and asked me why I hadn't gotten a hold of him. And I said, because I don't have your $11 on me. Any reasonable person at this point, I think, would have put together, she really doesn't need to pay me back. I couldn't figure out, and to this day still can't. Did he want to go out with me again, or did he just really want his money? I think it was both. I didn't have cash on me at the wedding, so I explained to him that, like I said earlier, I was going to have to mail him a check, and he said, okay. So eventually, I did mail him a check from Detroit. He continued to text a couple times. I think he asked me to dinner again, but I wasn't interested in replaying that entire scenario, so I just ghosted him, which I'm not in the practice of doing regularly, but I think that this constituted that. So fast forward maybe a year and a half, and I get a message from a friend, and she tells me she's dating someone new. And she says, I think you went out with him once. And I said, oh, yeah, I did. Tell me about your experience. And she said, well, it was really weird. Our first date, he wanted me to make him dinner, but then he wouldn't buy any of the groceries. So I ended up spending about $90 on a dinner. And at the end of it, he said, thanks. And I said, it seems about par for the course. Furthermore, he knew that we were mutual friends. She mentioned to him that we had seen each other once officially, but really three times because he was attempting to be paid back for the one time. And she said that he asked her if she knew whatever happened between us. And she's like, I'm not sure, I'll ask her. So after having a conversation with me, she immediately broke up with him. I think to this day, I hope he's not here. That was one of my fears because it's really hard to keep people like this anonymous. So if you are, you should be sorry, not me. But to my knowledge, this is still happening to this day. So I wanted to wrap up this story by sharing with you all that I'm engaged. Thank you. And the first thing my fiancé said to me when I told him I was going to be sharing this story was, please tell the audience first that it was not me. And I said, sure, I'll do that. Notice that I didn't. So maybe some of you thought, when I said I was engaged, that I was literally the biggest idiot on the planet. Thank you.
That was Christy Bowen's story from the Trapdoor's March Showcase. I'm in the studio now with Courtney Heiser from the Trapdoor. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you, along with Ben Larson, John Cheesebrew, and Becca Bell, each have your own social networks. How much of the Trapdoor planning comes from you knowing someone and saying, hey, that story you told me, you should share that with the Trapdoor audience, versus a stranger pitching a story and then in the process of getting it audience ready, they're no longer a stranger?
You know, it's probably about 50-50. We do take pitches through our email. We solicit those pitches through social media and at our shows, and we get quite a few that way. But oftentimes when we're having our weekly production meetings, something will just come to mind and we'll say, oh, hey, you know, a couple weeks ago I was hanging out with so-and-so and she told me the most outlandish story. It would be perfect for Trapdoor. So it's a little bit of both. And like you said, once somebody does come to our stage for the first time, even if they were a stranger prior to that, they certainly aren't when they walk away, which is really cool.
How much time do you get to or maybe need to spend preparing each storyteller? What's the process like?
We kind of started a new process earlier this year. We restructured and took some time off last year. And so now we spend a lot more time with storytellers before they actually get on the stage to tell their story live. Once we read their pitches, we ask them to come to a sort of quote unquote rehearsal, what we call workshopping, and they tell us their story. And we just kind of give them some feedback about, you know, what we think that they could maybe cut out of the story, how, what parts we really loved that we think they should expand on. And typically, you know, we do that two or three times with the storyteller before the actual event.
The process of bringing a story to an audience is similar for both WBOI and our friends at the Trapdoor. You find the best combinations of stories, there's a period of editing and preparation, and you hear from everywhere. I mean, NPR transports listeners across the country, and just in the time that I've been recording Trapdoor events, we've heard stories from Florida, the Carolinas, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. But all from storytellers right here in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, one of the stories that sticks with me is a gentleman named Scott Brown who had reached out to us via email and said, I'd love to tell a story at your event. And I said, great. What's the story about? Moving from Pittsburgh to, you know, Florida to the Fort Wayne area. And I said, how long have you been in Fort Wayne? And he said, about 3 weeks. So that was pretty cool. I don't know how he heard of us in that short time, but we're glad he did. He told a story at our January showcase and it was fantastic. And so, yeah, we have a lot of transplants to Fort Wayne that come in and tell stories about other places they've lived, or people from Fort Wayne who tell stories about places they've visited and adventures they've had. So there's a lot of variety there.
The Trapdoor wouldn't exist without support for the community, and here at WBOI, over 50% of our funding comes from listener support. So the same is definitely true here. You can join WBOI member Courtney Heiser and myself and show your support for 89.1 during this episode of WBOI Presents. Just head on over to WBOI.org and click the red donate button.
There's more stories to come after a short break. Thank you for listening to WBOI Presents.
Hi, this is Katie Anderson, Programming Director at 89.1 WBOI. During our spring fun drive, we've been thinking a lot about how the media landscape is changing. While some newsrooms are shrinking, WBOI is growing stronger. Just in the last 2 years, we've added staff, including our news director, Rebecca Green, and our newest reporter, Barb Anguiano. This has led to more coverage throughout our region, more long-form features, and development of new podcast projects we're all excited to produce in the upcoming year. WBOI Presents has also been changing. Wednesday nights and Saturday mornings are now home to local and regional programming, thanks to a growing list of partners. On top of panel discussions from our award-winning Issues and Ale series and other panels from Andy Downs and Purdue Fort Wayne, we've added presentations from Manchester University's Values, Ideas, and the Arts series, as well as voices from Indiana Tech's Tech Talk series on the opioid crisis, and of course, storytellers from the trapdoor. This home for civil discussions, difficult conversations, and stories from all over Northeast Indiana is only possible thanks to listener support. You can help to end our spring fund drive soon and successfully by pledging online at wboi.org. Just click the big red donate button, and thank you so much.